Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the wonderfully talented and very patriotic Drea Kaufman. Drea, how are you doing?
Hello!
Hello!
Someone gave me a great meme yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
It was if you spell booby trap backwards, you get party boob. And then they said happy 4th of July.
Oh, I saw a great meme the other day too, and it was, and we're recording this after the 4th of July, so, you know, give us a break. It's on the mind, but I saw one that was like, after the fireworks, don't forget to leave out the milk and cookies for Captain America.
I love it.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. I love it. So,
yeah, we're real American here.
That's right.
America.
proud to be in America. Anyway, so thank you for joining us for Outpost. We're so excited to be here. Before we dive into chapter 21, the House Elf Liberation Front, which was a much better name than Spew, you can find us all over the place. Check us out on Apple Podcasts over there. You can give us a star rating review, help people find us as you do that over there. You can also find us wherever you get your podcasts. And so we're also on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. Make sure you're following us. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty, where you should be liking us, and you can interact with all the different shows, with the show posts that we've got there going on. Great news coming out. So make sure you check that out, as well as TheNerdParty.com, where you can find all the shows we're doing. And TheNerdParty.com/contact. Choose a show, choose Outpost if you would like to send us an email. We'd love to talk to you that way as well. So many different ways to catch up with us. But this chapter literally picks up where the last one led off. And I think this is so interesting, and it's something that is obviously not in the movie, but it's a very important scene, because before they even head back to the common room, they fill in Ron with all he's missed with what Sirius told him, and they write Sirius a letter and then go to send it to him. So they end up at the Owlry first before they do anything else. So I really kind of like this whole little scene, because, again, it's one of those things where instead of kind of jumping to somewhere else, she really does a great job of making sure she's connecting all these points together.
Yeah, she does a good job with continuity, you know, continuing, remembering what people don't know what, right? So far, Ron doesn't know any of this. And it is nice, because there was that moment in this chapter where I was like, oh, yeah, in the book or in the movie, we literally never circle back to Sirius. He seriously has no idea what's happening beyond the fact that Harry's in danger. And that's literally where it leaves off. And you're like, oh, yeah, it would make sense that he would tell Sirius. So, that's smart. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really see that oversight. Now I can't not see that. All right, let's move on.
Well, and I think it's really just a nice little scene too, because you get Ron and Harry and Hermione all connecting back together. And the fact that Ron, you know, being so much on Harry's side again, and him being like, you know, I think you could totally win this, you know, and Harry, he knows why Ron's saying it, because he's trying to make up for it, but it also feels really good to him. And I also think it's really funny as well that Hermione likes to chime in. Oh, well, Harry's got a long way to go with this. And Ron's like, well, aren't you just a little ray of sunshine? So it's like they're back to their normal dynamic, and it's really cute.
And, like, Hermione doesn't have to be, like the super happy, supportive one. Mm-hmm. That's not the role she usually plays. You know, it's usually Ron's role. And you can just see she's like super relieved that she doesn't have to do that anymore. And she's like, oh, thank God I get to be myself again.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Harry feels the same way. They get back to the common room and he's able to relax. He's like, he can't remember the last time he felt properly hungry. And he just feels happy. He's got his best friend back at his side. He's got Hermione there as well. The first task is done. He doesn't have the other one for months. And I really like that. And I love, too, that they're all like, open the egg, open the egg, open the egg. And Harry, Hermione's like, he's supposed to work out the clue on his own. It's the tournament rules. And I love how Harry mutters to her, oh, yeah, like I was with the dragon. And she just kind of like grins and her face is getting all red. Like, oh, you're right.
It's like what she didn't think about what she was doing. Yes, with yes. Like cheating. And now she's like, oh, crap.
It's so funny. It's so funny.
That is funny.
So
I do like that we didn't get, there's a pretty iconic scene from the movie that doesn't actually exist in the book. There's actually two of them. It's all kind of part of one where, you know, Hermione's playing the middle ground and she says something about like, I'm not an owl, right? She's not going to carry messages back and forth. And then, you know, Ron's like, well, I told Seamus, yeah, who told this person, who told this, to tell Hagrid, to tell you, you know, like that he was responsible for sharing the dragon information with Harry. Like, that's not all in the book at all. And not having it, I actually kind of wish it wasn't in the movie. It just sort of added to the childishness of what was happening. And I feel like that sort of took away from the realness of the like relationships. So being able to move on from that without having to go through that in the book was really nice. So it's nice they're back together. It's nice that everyone's friends again and back to their normal ways. And
well, no, I agree with you. I think the book does such a better job with this, and part of that, it's easier to do in a book because what's going on is so much more psychological with these characters and the age they're at and all of this stuff growing up, and you know, Ron's feelings about being poor and Harry always getting attention, and that's hard to necessarily play off in a movie, right? And yeah, this definitely, I think, works so much better for the story.
Especially when you have limited time to develop relationships and things. Like, I get it, but it didn't give the same rich and the same, like, real feeling that Harry's going through, right? It made it seem very childish, and I don't think it was that at all. You know, I think that the feelings, I mean, as we come to develop the characters and learn more about them as we go on, we'll find more and more about them, and these attributes don't go away. So they're not because they're childish. They're just a part of, you know, who they are and their upbringing and their insecurities and things. So, you know, it's really, I'm really grateful for the way the book played out the relationship and brought them back together and into the common room to have a good time and everything. You know, it was really nice. It was a great way to wrap it up. And, you know, I like that it was sort of similar with the egg in the movie, and that, you know, there's this big cheering. And I love that they talk about there's a banner that someone drew, and I just, all the little touches were really nice. It was really fun. I want to go to a party in the Gryffindor common room. Do you want to go to a party in the Gryffindor common room?
Yes, because it sounds like it would be awesome.
Yeah, I feel like we should make that happen. Yeah, agreed.
I feel like Owlpost does need to go to Harry Potter World together.
I think so.
Yeah. So we need to make that happen.
I think so.
So I also really like that there's this little moment where Fred and George are passing out food to everybody, and Hermione's like, and she asked them, she's like, hey, Where'd you get this food? And they're like, from the house elves in the kitchen. She's like, how do you get in there? And they tell her how to get in there. And I actually really like that it's behind the painting of a bowl of fruit. And the way to get in is you tickle the pear and it giggles and it lets you in. That's just really funny.
And I like that Fred and George very quickly figure out why she wants to know, too.
Yeah. And they're like, you're not going to get them to go on strike or like stir them up into rebellion, are you?
She's like, they're like, maybe we shouldn't have told you that after. They're like, kind of like, oh, I wish I could take that back.
It is pretty funny. Well, the rest of the chapter is fairly interesting because there are only really a few things that happen. The first one is that it is December now and it's cold, and Harry is very thankful that the castle has thick walls and fireplaces everywhere, because he's like, man, that drum string ship just tossing out on the lake looks awful to be in. And
the Beauxbatons must be cold.
Yeah. I mean, so I thought that was just a nice little bit of whimsy there, just talking about life at the castle in the winter. And then they're at the care of magical creatures, and they're still taking care of their skirts. And this is not the greatest thing to be doing, but Rita Skeeter shows up out of the blue and starts trying to sweet talk Hagrid into an interview. And I love how Harry, Ron, and Hermione are trying to do everything to get Hagrid to realize that this is not a good idea, but he is not picking up what they're laying down.
he's not picking up what they're putting down here. And I love the reasoning. Like, you know, Hagrid's done much worse things and hasn't been fired. I'm sure he'll be fine.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I love the reasoning. It was hilarious. And you're like, okay, well, I get what you're saying, but I don't think this is going to end well anyway.
Well, and I love Ron's like, what's the worst that could happen? They get rid of the skewers? Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say worst? I mean the best. And I love how Hermione and Harry just like laughing at that, because that is pretty funny.
It is pretty good. It's hilarious. I mean, why? I mean, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Absolutely not.
Especially considering, what is it? They've like eaten each other,
yes,
or killed each other, or like now we're down from everyone having their own to there just being one. And it's like pretty big. And they're just like, someone was all scratched up and bruised. And like, it sounds like a terrible idea. It's just a terrible lesson. He's like a clumsy Newt Scamander. Yeah. Like, I appreciate it, and I love his passion,
yep,
for them, but like, there's a time and a place, man.
No, I agree with you. He is definitely a lot like Newt in that way. I love too that we're at divination class, and well, more death is being predicted, and yeah,
no.
Shocking. And I love how Harry's just not even paying attention. But I do have to say that this may be something we want to pay attention to. To see if she's right, you know, because she has been right before. So I guess we need to keep this in the back of our minds to see if any of this actually comes into play.
Yeah.
So.
But I do like that even Harry this time says, like, it would be more shocking if this wasn't the seventh time.
Right.
I love how he was like, if I had died as many times as she said, it would, if I defied death as many times as she said I'd die, I would be a modern miracle,
yeah,
or a medical miracle or something.
Awesome.
I love that he was just like, this is ridiculous. You know, you can hear him like having that moment.
Well, and I think it's kind of funny too, because they finished divination and they're looking for Hermione and they can't find her anywhere. They even search the library and the only person's there is Crumb. And then they end up running into her. And she's like, guys, come with me. And so they end up in the kitchens. But before that, right before that, Ron's like, you're not making us do something spew stuff related again. She's like, it's not named spew. And he's like, so have you changed the name to the House Elf Liberation Front? And I'm like, that is such a better name, Ron. And apparently he just came up with that on the fly. And it does really sound like something from like the 1920s, you know? Like,
yeah, it does.
Yeah, I love it. So, and they end up in the kitchens, and we have an old friend there. And I love that we're on in Adobe.
I know, me too. I love him. And I love how he has kind of a positive approach to everything,
mm-hmm,
even though his story is maybe not all that wonderful. But he's so grateful,
yep,
that Dumbledore hired him to work and hired him like a paying employee,
mm-hmm,
to do this. And he's so proud of himself for making a wage. And, you know, he had such a hard time over the last 2 years, which I was like, it's been 2 years? Oh, my God, it has been 2 years. Because for us, you know, it's only been like, yes, I don't know, 6 months. And it was really interesting. And I think my favorite moment, though, is when, you know, Hermione's like, well, how much is he paying you?
Yeah.
And he's like, a galleon a week with like one weekend a month off.
No, he gets one day a month off.
Oh, one. No, it's 1 week. Maybe it's one weekend day off or something. And Hermione's like, well, that doesn't seem very fair or enough. He's like, oh, well, Dumbledore offered me 10 galleons a week and every weekend off. But I didn't want that. And you're just like, it was a great depiction of, like, you know, Hermione has one idea of what these house elves should have, and the house elves themselves have a completely different idea. Even one that's wanted to be free and excited to be free still only wanted a galleon and a day. And that's it. Didn't want any more than that.
And Dobby has a great line there. He says he likes freedom, but he isn't wanting too much. He likes work better. And so even our, like, hallmark house elf, one who loves being free, Dobby's free, you know, like, he also loves what he does. But he also wants, for him specifically, he wants to be paid for it, you know, and he wants to be appreciated for it. And I think this is something that's really fascinating here, this whole idea of, like, and that's the danger of being outraged on people's behalf when you don't necessarily understand everything about this. And we get a really interesting look at this because Winky is also here now. Dobby has found her and he's brought her here, and she will not be paid. She is not happy about being here, and she hates the fact that she's not working for Mr. Crouch anymore, because
she's, like, bawling the entire time.
She loves him and she wants to be there with him, and Hermione cannot understand that. But the only thing that we saw between Winky and Mr. Crouch was what happened in that one moment. Whereas she says, look, my whole family, my mother worked for him, my grandmother worked for him, we've all worked for the Crouch family for generations. And so this is something that was very important to her. And what I love about the whole thing is it's very nuanced. It's not cut and dry. And you also get the house elves' perspective from the other house elves that who just work at Hogwarts. And they're not all that happy about Dobby being here either. And they don't necessarily like his attitude at all, because they seem very happy with the job that they have been given and the way that they are treated, especially under the headship of Dumbledore here at Hogwarts.
They're definitely more in the Winky camp than they are the Dobby camp, you know. They definitely more align with her and feel sympathetic for her. The fact that she was fired, you know, and set free, and that's horrible. And no one wants that. And it's really fascinating. I also think that Dobby's approach to his pay and his compensation and liking work is also a little bit of a testament to the sense of entitlement that we sometimes feel. You know, I think it happens a lot, and not to say it only is, or everyone's always like this, but personally, I've seen it several times when someone, you know, goes to college and graduates from college and then has this expectation of this high paying job and, you know, wants good hours and good benefits and all the money, not realizing that, you know, you still have to prove yourself and you still have to earn your way to those things, and just getting a college degree doesn't necessarily entitle you to those things. And I feel like that is kind of true across a lot of different age groups and a lot of different professions, mm-hmm. and a lot of different places, that we have this feeling that we're entitled to all these things. And it's kind of nice to see the house, you know, to see Dobby be like, yeah, I'm free, but I'm not entitled to those things. I haven't earned them yet, you know, and it was kind of him, but I only want what I feel like I've earned. And reading it with that kind of caveat on it for me was really interesting, and a good testament to, like, you know, sometimes it's okay to earn your stake, because it feels good. You know, it feels rewarding, and nothing feels better than earning a day off versus just getting a day off. So, you know, it's really a unique perspective and a very mature one that, you know, he kind of takes to things. And, you know, it's also nice when someone likes what they do. Even if it is serving me tea.
Yes. Well, and I thought that was also fascinating because Dumbledore has no issues with paying the house elves. If they came to him and asked for it, he apparently has no issues with giving them that. And I thought that was really, really nice to see that he, you know, he was willing to give Dobby more than...
Than he wanted,
you know, than he was willing to
take. It's the backwards of most negotiations where you go asking for a raise, settling for less. Like, it's like your employer coming and giving you more and you saying, oh, no, that's too much. You know, it's so different. But it does show his willingness to pay others and that, you know, if other house elves wanted to be free and be paid and compensated, that it's out. We get the impression that Dumbledore would absolutely entertain that idea and would absolutely be open to that. So there's probably a reason why that hasn't happened.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think it's great. And I love this whole thing. And I even love how, like, you know, they talk about this whole idea of house elves enslavement. Part of that is keeping the secrets of the house. And I love that Dumbledore told Dobby, and you could say whatever you want about me. You could call me, you know, a barmy old codger. I don't care. You know, and how Dobby's like, I would never do that. I never
speak ill of Dumbledore.
But I think it's fascinating. We get this whole insight into what their life is like. But they, again, like Winky, she does not want to speak ill of Mr. Crouch, even though she's not in his employ anymore. And the only person she'll speak badly of is Bagman, which, coupled with last week and the strange conversation between him and Harry before the, you know, the challenge, I'm like, this is kind of weird.
Yeah, it's all very strange. I do like, though, that the end of the chapter kind of gets a little more lighthearted again. And that, you know, they're talking about like, oh, I don't think Winky would find that very funny. Or I don't think, you know, Mr. Crouch has that kind of sense of humor. And then there's kind of a stab at Percy and they're like, don't tell Percy. It was like, Percy wouldn't know a joke if it flew at his face or something like that.
Yes. Okay. So I just want to go because you're absolutely right. Because that whole exchange is fantastic, but what Ron says is Percy wouldn't recognize a joke if it danced naked in front of him wearing Dobby's tea cozy.
Yeah. It's perfect, and it's so Ron, and it's hilarious, and you're like, yeah, I guess Percy probably wouldn't recognize that. So I do love how it kind of ends on a lighter hearted note, you know, brings it back to a good Ron quip. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think what I'm actually kind of fascinated to see is where this goes, because I love, again, she continues to add more to this house elf conversation, and we keep finding more and more, and I'm really going to be fascinating to see where it ends up going, because I want to know what she's going to end up doing. So
dun dun dun, to be continued.
Yep, absolutely. We've got our next chapter that's you know, coming up here. Chapter 22, which is crazy. This book is starting to fly by with the unexpected task coming up. But
I'm so excited.
Ooh, it sounds pretty fun to me. So, but before we get there, where can everybody find you?
Sure. You can come and tell me about your 4th of July on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. I'm also on Instagram under the same name. You can find me here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills talking all about Star Wars. So make sure you check that out. It's a lot of fun. And then I'm over on the Trek FM network talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones on The Orb. I am on the 602 Club, which is the General Geek Show, talking every fandom that we love, not just one. And then, last but not least, you can find me over on Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney, talking about films, but through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.